Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
By the way, Matt Cotrillo is going to be on the Bucknell football broadcast at Georgetown. Coming up Saturday, he'll be joining Kevin for that. Matt will do a great job. It's old Kevin, obviously, but Matt will do a great job. It was great during the break. Sue was telling amusing travel stories, I believe. Is that what that was, a travel story?
Fun flashbacks, those Jersey Shore Shikellamy games of days gone by at Thompson Street Stadium.
You know what I was looking forward to? An amusing story about how he closed the deal. All right, so...
Oh, that one, yeah. Just a few hours ago.
It was so funny. We got $1 million. How come we never get that story? With Jamie, we get that story. We don't get that story with him. All right. Okay. Jason Galloway in a few moments from the Wisconsin State Journal on Penn State, Wisconsin. First of all, our play-by-play call of the day.
Oh, she's fresh, that's for sure. He's not tired.
The puck near wing for Alexiak. And now near side, Carlson down the wall to Kuznetsov. And from the left hash, brought back along the wing. And back to the left point. Leaving it for Carlson. Moving in the left circle. In front for Oshie. He scores! T.J. Oshie! 2-1 Washington!
John Walton with the call on the Capitals Radio Network. And that was the game winner. 2-1, the Capitals won it. Ever tell you the my Dick Girardi, T.J. Oshie story?
I'd love to hear it.
Okay.
Definitely, I'd love to hear it. Then we'll get Jason on the line.
Yeah, it was 2014. It was the Olympics in Sochi. Guys are crazy.
That's right. I think that game live in the States was like a Saturday morning game, wasn't it?
It was a Saturday morning game.
Yeah.
So we get to... He had to rent a car. And it's the morning of a basketball game. And so I swing by the hotel, I pick him up, and I'm going to take him over to get the rental car. And it's really snowing. And I've got the game on, listening to the game, and now the game has gone to a shootout. And Oshie gets in there, and Oshie shoots, and he scores. Okay. Now the Russians get it, and Russians score. Oshie goes out there again, shoots, scores. Russians go out, they shoot, score. Then Dick says... Put it Patrick Kane. They put Oshie back out. Oshie shoots and scores. Now in the Olympics, you're allowed. You are allowed to keep putting the same guy out if you want. You don't have to change up. So it's an Olympic rule. So the Russians go out. They score, and it's the Americans' turn again. And again, Dick says, "Put in Patrick Kane." Oshie goes back out there. Oshie scores. Russians then score. All right. Then they're about the Americans go out. Dick says, put in Patrick Kane. I said, what's your fascination with Patrick Kane? He looks at me. He's the only guy I know. And Oshie scores again. The Russians didn't score, and the United States won and beat the Russians behind TJ Oshie. So, yeah, he's the only guy I know. I'm like, oh, okay, that makes sense to me. Oh,
I was hoping maybe he'll be a Penn someday with Sid, but then he's across the ice from Sid last night. That was a crusher last night.
They've lost five in a row. We're going to talk to Bob Grove about that in the final half hour. Now let's get into Wisconsin football with Jason Galloway from the Wisconsin State Journal. Jason, welcome. Thanks a lot for your time. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Okay, so what role have injuries played in what we've seen from Wisconsin this season?
Oh, it's been huge. I mean, they lost, a lot of people forget that they lost Garrett Rand back in May. He was supposed to be a starting defensive end for this team, and this defensive line has been one of the weaknesses of the entire, the entire team. And Isaiah Laudermilk, their other top defensive end, has been injured a lot, although he's getting back now. And then Olivier Sungapolo, their 4-year starter at nose tackle, was just ruled out for the season today. Actually, he missed last week against Rutgers, and now he's not going to be back. So, defensive line, it's been huge. There's been a lot of injuries in the secondary as well. Scott Nelson has been out for a long time. Dakota Dixon missed some games. Those are their two starting safeties. They've had some cornerbacks miss a few games here and there. And then, of course, their starting quarterback, Alex Hornibrook, is questionable for this game and has been out with concussions the last few weeks. So, their number one blocking tight end is also out for the season. So it's been bad for Wisconsin. They've been hit by the injury bug a lot.
What can you tell us about Jack Cohn? I know idealistically they would love to keep him at 4 games or fewer and keep the year for him. So that might be difficult moving forward. When you've watched him, how good has he been?
He's been okay so far. I mean, I think they've been pretty careful about how much they put on his plate and how much they expect from him. I think when he's been in the game, they've been trying to run the ball and allow him to just do what he needs to move the chains. And I think that, in the first game he's played against Northwestern a couple weeks ago, he talked about after that game about how he went through his progression a little bit too quickly and maybe checked down a little too often. So it's been a pretty conservative approach with him in there so far. It'll be interesting to see with, if Hornibrook is out this week, if he's able to maybe open it up a little bit more. Now Wisconsin's still going to want to open this or play on the ground. They're still going to want to, use Jonathan Taylor first and foremost and control the clock and move the chains that way. But against this Penn State team, they may at some point he may have to make some plays. So it'll be interesting to see, if he's prepared to do that.
I think Scott Nelson and Dakota Dixon are a terrific combo back at the safety spot. What has Nelson's absence meant to what Wisconsin's been able to do in the secondary, and also the fact how young they are at corner?
Yeah, I think it's been a little tough. They've just been changing in and out so many guys in that secondary at corner and at safety. And, with Scott Nelson out, I have a couple guys like Eric Burrell and Evan Bondock have gotten their opportunity, and they haven't played too poorly, but I think it would be good for them to get Nelson back. And, I actually think the secondary has kind of come on in recent weeks, even with some of the injuries they've had. I think they've played pretty well. I think the young cornerbacks are really starting to really find their footing and kind of take a little step up. And, I think that's one of the areas they've grown a lot in this season. So if they get Nelson back and have that starting duo back, and then the young corners continue to kind of take steps forward, they could finish the season strong.
You get to watch Jonathan Taylor every single time. What do you really like about him? Where does he still need to grow?
Well, I really like even last year as a true freshman, he's a guy that already looked like such a mature runner. He has really good vision, but he has the patience to go with it. He's not a guy that's going to get too antsy and get in front of his blocks. He really understands how Wisconsin's offense and how it works, and a really good job of staying patient. I think one of his best attributes is his balance. He can take a big hit and keep his feet under him and keep going and not really lose any speed when he's breaking tackles, which I think is big. And he's got the top end speed to beat guys to the end zone too. Once he gets going, he's a hard guy to catch if he gets past that second level. So there's a lot to like about him. Really, the one thing you really need him to get better at is ball security. He's a guy that has had major issues with fumbling.
Yes, he has.
Had a couple against Northwestern, and I had a lot last season too. And he had a good run of games where between the New Mexico game in week two and the Northwestern game a couple weeks ago, where he didn't lose any fumbles. But then he had two against Northwestern, and so that's definitely still an issue. And you hope he can clean that up at some point. But outside of that, I think that's really the main thing for him.
Yet when they go to the bench, a lot of people love to have Deal. Groshak's another guy a lot of people love to have. What have they meant to giving him a break, but also making sure there's not a drop-off at the tailback spot?
I think it's huge. I think Deal being there has been really big because he's been injured a lot the last couple years with ankle issues. And Bradrick Shaw, the guy that was really the number two guy on early downs last year, has been recovering from an ACL tear all year, and he hasn't been out there. And I think Deal is, Deal's the guy that really showed flashes as a redshirt freshman back in 2015, and just is finally getting through some of the injury issues he's had. And he's looked really great all season. And then from Groshek's perspective, Taylor's not a guy, and this is another thing Taylor can improve on too, is he's not really a third down guy. He still could get better in pass protection, and he drops a lot of balls, doesn't have great hands right now. And Groshek gives them what they need on third down and in passing situations. He's caught a lot of balls this year. Running out of the shotgun formation has been really big for them. In a passing situation, maybe a second and long, they hand it to him out of the shotgun a lot, and against, they spread out the defense and give him the ball, and he's able to make some stuff happen. So Groshek has been big for them too, and I think that sort of that trio of backs is really, they've really complemented each other well, and I think it's really worked for Wisconsin this season.
Jake Ferguson, you mentioned having, I think it was Neuville, I think is the guy that's out for the year, right?
Yeah, Xander Neuville.
Yeah, and he's out for the year. Jake Ferguson, Barry Alvarez's grandson, has stepped up. When they, he doesn't start, but what kind of receiver has he become in this offense?
He's really talented. They mainly use him on third down. They split him out wide a lot, and he's a real matchup problem. I think he's about 6'5". Really still has some more weight to put on him. He could really become a real force at tight end here in a couple of years. He's still a retro freshman, and he's got great hands. He's always had great hands. Now he's a guy that I think maybe he doesn't play quite as much, and he doesn't start because he still needs to get better in the blocking area. That's the 20 area. In high school he was always split out wide. He was sort of more of a wide receiver in high school, and so he's still kind of getting used to that aspect of the game. And I think he's made strides in that area, and I think at some point down the road he could become a real complete tight end. But he's a real weapon on third down for them this year, and I think they should try to get him a little bit more involved on first and second down in the pass game if possible. I think it's really he provides a real matchup problem that really maybe they could take even more advantage of going forward.
In fact, Jason, he probably didn't put his hand on the ground when he was high school. In Wisconsin, he has to.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the things that I had, a lot of the tight ends in the past, and I talked to Troy Fumagalli, who was an All-American here.
Yes.
Who just left. I talked to him about that, and he was a small guy coming in as he was a walk-on his first year, and said, they told him, if you play tight end at Wisconsin, you're going to have to block. That's one of the things. You can't just be a pass catcher. And Fumagalli really struggled with blocking in his first couple of years, and he got really good in that area his last couple of years. And so I think Ferguson could take the same path there, where in a couple of years he could be a real force in both the run and pass game.
I've always liked Ryan Conley. Of course, he scored the touchdown against Penn State in the Big Ten championship game. And my broadcast partner, Jack Hamm, has always been big on Edwards. What have they meant to the defense? But also, Sagapolo being out, what's the domino of protecting the two of them without the nose tackle there?
Yeah, I think Edwards and Connolly have been the best two players on this defense this season, and they've been a real force in the middle. And Paul Christ even said, without even being asked of them, I think he was asked about something else and maybe about the defense in general, and he said, what's going on with our inside linebackers is really special this year, and you can really see those two. Edwards Edwards finished second for the Buckus Award last year, and Connolly's the one that's a semifinalist this year. So they've been great, and it's been more difficult on them to have some of the replacements they had to have up front. Now you've had Sagapolo up there in the middle, which has really helped, but with him out, they're going to have to rely on a true freshman.
Yep.
And Bryson Williams to play the nose. And I think Williams has made a lot of progress this year, but again, he's still a true freshman, and it's still going to be a pretty big drop off from Sagapolo to him. So it's going to be difficult. They have struggled to stop the run quite a bit this year, and it's just going to be, they're just going to have to find a way to get it done even without Sagapolo. It's going to be pretty difficult, and those inside linebackers may be asked to do a little bit more, but we'll have to see if they're able to overcome that.
With Jason Galloway joining us from Madison. Jason, how much of a shock to the system was the BYU game?
It really was a shock. I mean, this is a team that was so bad the year before, and Wisconsin went to Provo and just really blew them out last year on the road. And I know the players say that, you know, they take every game week to week, but I just don't know. Maybe there was a little bit of overlooking that opponent. You know, it's we thought maybe BYU was really improved after that game, and it turns out they're improved from last year, but they're still not a team that coming into Camp Randall and winning that game. And so it was kind of a shock to kind of set the tone for this entire season, really. I mean, they came back the next week and had a huge win at Iowa, which looking back now is really the biggest win of their season by a long shot, I think. And they were able to kind of get back on track and then go into the bye week. But I think it was just sort of a sign of things to come for this team that they couldn't get things consistently going offensively, and they had some issues stopping the run, which really hurt them against BYU.
Jason, what do you think of Penn State?
I think they're a pretty good team. You know, they've obviously had a disappointing year too. I think when you compare I got a question this week about kind of comparing the disappointing seasons between Wisconsin and Penn State, and I kind of feel like Wisconsin's has got to be a little more disappointing with some of the losses they've had, like the BYU and Northwestern, where Penn State, you know, I know they had expectations of competing for the playoffs and winning that East Division and getting back to Indianapolis after they were there a couple of years ago. But, you know, the losses to Michigan, Ohio State, and Michigan State, you know, it's they're good teams they're losing to, and I think the program's going to be just fine. They're I'm sure they'll bounce back next season. And of course, that Michigan game maybe was a little bit worse than if Trace McSorley had been healthy, maybe that wouldn't look quite as bad. Obviously it's a disappointing season for them, but I still think they're a pretty good team, and I would definitely favor them to get a win this week.
I have to ask you about Northwestern, because it turns out they are not on Penn State's schedule this year. Obviously they won the game, and they've done so with the guy they thought was going to be Larkin was going to be the starting tailback. Then because of a medical, he has to exit. How surprised are you by what Northwestern's been able to accomplish?
It is pretty surprising. I can't say it caught me completely off guard, you know, because Northwestern has done this in recent years where they just start the season really poorly and they have some losses that really leave you scratching your head.
Right.
And then they come on strong near the end. You know, this has kind of been a theme of them for a good while now. And so, it does kind of surprise me that they're in such pole position to win the West. I mean, I definitely did not expect them to win the division. But to see them kind of bounce back strong after being poor in the non-conference isn't too surprising. It's crazy to look back to that, you know, they really nearly beat had a good chance of beating Michigan back early in the conference schedule. And, you know, at the time that would have been a big upset, but even now, looking back now, it looks like it would have been an even bigger win for them with what Michigan's been able to do the rest of the season. So, I'm pretty surprised at what they've been able to do there. And it's credit to them. I mean, at this point, it looks like they'd really have to mess up down the stretch here to not win the West.
Absolute pleasure, Jason. Thanks so much for your time. I look forward to seeing you Saturday. And everybody here is a little ticked off at you right now. You want to know why?
No, why is that?
Because you're bringing your weather with you. All right. Jason, thanks so much. Appreciate the time. I look forward to seeing you Saturday.
All right, anytime. I'll see you then.
Jason Galloway from the Wisconsin State Journal. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Great to have you with us on this Thursday. Patrick Chambers and James Franklin on the show tonight. And then we're going to have the Steeler broadcast on 100.9 The Valley, but we're going to have Westwood on KOK, right?
That is tonight. Yeah, Westwood 1 national broadcast will crank up at 8, and if you want the Steelers, 6:20, two-hour pregame leading up to the kick tonight with Billy Tunch and Wolf over on The Valley.
Well, you know what? I've already started cranking up the fireplace. I told you, I have everything done. I printed off charts today. They're done. So I'm just going to put my feet up tonight and watch Thursday Night Football. Very few Thursday games I look forward to. The Rams and the Vikings, I did. And to its credit, it lived up to expectation. Well, this is one I'm really looking forward to, and I wouldn't be surprised if it lived up to expectations. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us on this Thursday. Both Patrick Chambers and James Franklin on the show tonight from Primanti Brothers in downtown State College at 6:05. As the suit is always referred to it as the All Steve Jones Thursday. A lot of email exchanges between the suit, Joe Portelli, and Kyle.
Joe and Kyle's were actually in English.
That didn't take long, huh?
Holy mackerel.
Barely a week. Okay.
Whew, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. Great to have you with us on the show here. And great. They're bringing somebody to campus. They want me to talk to them and never heard of them. All right. Great. No.
Pep talk?
No.
Okay.
No. This has the guests they're bringing in. I'm like going, okay, great. We really want you to go. And the answer is no. Okay. I am too busy. I can't do it.
Over here is the Lion Shrine. Down there is the Creamery. A few more blocks down the stadium. There you go.
Okay. There you go.
Yep. Stay on the same street. You're good.
you wanted to bring him in? You give him the tour. I'm not doing it. All right. Okay. The Penguins have lost five in a row. And with that as a backdrop, we bring in Bob Grove. Bob, welcome back. It's always a pleasure to talk with you anytime.
Hey, great to be back with you.
Well, we're not exactly talking about a club on the roll. Last night, the T.J. Oshie goal gave Washington the 2-1 win. So that's five losses in a row. What have been the common threads in the loss? You know, and it may be correctable, but what are the common threads?
Lack of defensive detail. Lack of emotional pitch. I think those are the two things that kind of jump out at me. Lack of a forecheck. There's a lot of little things that go into winning hockey games and a lot of habits that you get into to make it all possible on a regular basis. And the Penguins have been in and out of those habits throughout the season, really. You know, 14 games in. They were the better team last night by a mile.
Yeah.
They should have won the game had they been able to find a second goal, and they should have found one, but they didn't. And
that's right.
And they made a defensive mistake in the final 2 minutes, and it cost them the game. So this has sort of been where they've been at. They had a great road trip where their stars were stars and putting up tons of points, and Matt Murray was playing great. And since they've been back, the stars have been relatively quiet. Murray's not been as good. And so all the things, the foundation that supports those guys, the work ethic, attention to detail, it's all until last night disappeared.
You can correct some of those things, but let me go back to the middle one you mentioned, lack of emotional pitch. Why? I mean, I realize there are certain personalities, Bob. I've got that, okay? And sometimes you have a group of guys where, okay, and then you have a bunch of rah-rah guys who can't play. But the lack of emotional pitch, does that surprise you?
That it's happened as often as it's happened in the first 14 games, yes.
Yes.
Over the course of 82 games for any team,
right. It happens.
There are some nights, right, they come out, they're just flat start to finish, and that's that. But it's happened several times to them, and there's no excuse for it. I mean, they're just, you know, their pushback when they've been down, it just hasn't been good enough consistently. They've gotten down in games, and then they turn into, like the New Jersey game is a perfect example. They lose 5-1, and Patrick Hornquist spent, you know, a lot of time running around trying himself to put the team on his back emotionally and just run around hitting people, causing havoc everywhere. And it shouldn't fall to him to have to do that,
right,
to try and light a fire under everybody else. But that's where he was at. And, you know, he took a penalty. That led to a power play goal against. And instead of a comeback, it sealed the victory for New Jersey. So this is an issue they got to get figured out.
Look, every team because there are changes in personnel all the time. Every team takes on its own personality. How are they chemistry-wise? Because, like any team, they had to make changes. And whenever you make changes, it does change a locker room. It does change on-ice performance. So are they having a chemistry issue because, you know, they're still getting used to each other?
Well, they are still getting used to each other, but I don't think the frequent lineup changes and position changes and pairing changes that Mike Sullivan is making is helping the cause.
Okay.
And so that's one of the things I see that, for me, I think he's always been a guy to make changes. There's nothing wrong with that. If you're a coach and you're not happy with the way things are going, Steve, you're crazy to just keep trotting out the same players and thinking that the results are going to change.
Right.
Because they're not. So I get the fact that he needs to make changes, and I also get the fact that he needs internal competition to push players to make them better. I get all that, but to this point, a month into the season, he's made so many more changes than he normally does. Guys coming in and out of the lineup. The forward lines have totally jumbled. You know, he split up Malkin and Kessel last night. He split up Dumoulin and Letang for the New Jersey game, and again, they played a part last night. Those are significant moves. And I don't know, as a player, if you're going to get to be the best player you can be when there's so many changes going around all around you, including you, on almost a nightly basis.
I have no problem with changing once in a while because complacency can be bad. But at the same time, you know instinctively which guys actually do work well together. To me, you ride those horses for as long as you can because you know it works.
Right, and it was a little – so this is the issue is Malkin and Kessel together.
Yeah.
They play with Carl Hagelin on the left side. While all these changes have been going on really since opening night, that's the one line he never touched.
Right.
He just left them alone. So, you know, now he's got Hornquist playing with those two, and he had Kessel down with Riley Sheahan. And unfortunately, Riley Sheahan is off to a horrendous start. He's having a terrible season. And, you know, I just can't see that being working long term. You know, he left them together all night long. Well, I should say that because by the third period, Kessel was playing with Sid, and that's a pairing we never ever see for any length of time.
Right.
So I don't know where they're going to go from here. And I have to point out that, you know, I'm saying I think he's making too many changes, but yet in the midst of all these changes, last night they had a tremendous effort
yeah.
last night. So, you know, that sort of goes against what I'm saying, but I just don't think you got it last night, but I don't know that if you continue this kind of frequency of change that this is going to happen every night for you.
Right, yeah, I understand it. What about the defense pairings? I know he's been changing that up as well. What does that do for backline and blue line chemistry?
Well, you know, those guys have been – they've been okay outside of, you know, Chris Letang and
right.
I think Oleksiak probably. I mean, Jamie Oleksiak he had a rough night against New Jersey, but generally he's been pretty good for them. And Chris Letang has just been an absolute star from opening night on.
Yep.
He's just been great all season long. But the other guys, so he's got Jack Johnson playing with them now. They've been okay. There's been no problem there. But
right.
Oleksiak and Olli Maatta have been playing together, and they really struggled for me against New Jersey. They were better last night. Here's the bottom line. Justin Schultz, they miss him. Big time.
There's no doubt.
They're really coming to realize that how much they miss him because, you know, they put Chad Ruedel back in last night, and, you know, it was Ricola was in before. Now he's back out. Ruedel's back in. And going into last night's game, Ruedel was, I think, -8 in his last 9 regular season games, so he wasn't playing all that well.
Right.
So without Schultz there, I mean, you can easily make the argument that they, you know, if they're going to make some kind of move, that's where they need to make a move. But there are also some places up front where they could think about it, too.
It's also a long season, and they've hit this rut. And because it is a long season, you and I can have this conversation in January, and this becomes a footnote. But, you know, what do you want to see now in the next week that tells you that they're starting to put that in the rearview mirror and it's getting smaller? Where they learned from it. Because last night they did. I mean, I watched the game last night. I thought they gave a great effort last night. They just missed opportunities.
Yeah. No. So for me, the signs that they're coming out of it are they get a similar effort on a nightly, pretty much a nightly basis for the next couple of weeks.
Right.
So can they, okay, we know they can do this, so they just played a really, really good game.
Yeah.
What's the spot? Can you do it, you know, three times a week? I don't know. The best teams do, for the most part. And, you know, so that's what I'm looking for. Is are they going to get back to the having a forecheck like they had last night? Are they going to get back to the point where there was a point with 8 minutes to go in the third period last night where Washington, on home ice, had 12 even-strength shots for the game. That's how much puck possession and how well the Penguins were playing. And so if you can do that against the defending cup champions, then I don't want to hear why you can't do it against Arizona Saturday night and going forward the rest of the month. So we'll see if they can get some kind of consistency, because they've shown glimpses of it, but that's what you're looking for.
Yeah. I'm not surprised the Kings made their change. Okay, just the way they are. Were you surprised by Joel Quenneville and his whole staff, old Samuelson, the whole group? Were you surprised that the Blackhawks did that?
Yeah, not really, because I think there were whispers about this last year when, you know, they were on their way to missing the playoffs.
Right.
That's when everybody started to say, hey, wait a minute, why are we just assuming Joel Quenneville's, like, here for eternity?
Right.
Maybe he's not, you know, and that's, you know, that's the NHL. I mean, you know, Steve, if you look at the rate that NHL coaches get fired in general, right? He's been there forever.
Yeah, I see the stat, how many coaches have been hired during his tenure with Chicago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So he did a spectacular job, but it's not only missing last year, it's also since their last cup win, when they've got in the playoffs,
They've been flat.
And they've had, so Jonathan Toews last year was just not very good.
Right.
And he's having a great bounce back year this year. But I will say this for Joel Quenneville, you know, Stan Bowman's has had over the years a lot of big, big salary cap challenges, and that has fed into some of the leaner years they've had in this time, because they were the only team that was paying $21 million to two players in Kane and Toews. And when you try to build the rest of your team when you're paying two guys that kind of money, it is hard.
No question. I've always been a big believer, Bob, in any professional sport that has a salary cap, that you pick out a core group, you try to take care of them, you build around them. But when you put that much money into two, that's where I think the Penguins have been brilliant with their salary structure. It's allowed them to thrive year in and year out, for the most part, because Crosby's kept his numbers stable. Malkin's kept his numbers stable. Chicago didn't.
Yeah. No, I think you're exactly right. That is how the Penguins won. That's how they won the Stanley Cups, is Fleury, Letang, Malkin, Crosby. So they had those four guys. That was their core. And they filled in around the edges. You know, and in 2016, they were bringing up guys that, you know, people had never heard of around the lake. Brian Rust, Connor Sheary.
Yep.
Hoisting the Stanley Cup. And these are entry-level contracts and won't make any money. That is the formula. That's how you do it in today's NHL, is exactly how you described. That's how Pittsburgh's been able to do it. Chicago hasn't quite got there.
Right, because they invested so much in two guys. Now you're taking the other roster spots, let's just say skaters, the other 16 skaters, and they're not going to be the same level, because you can't pay top dollar to them to get somebody to fill in around them. So,
yeah, and I will just real quickly say, though, I think they also made a mistake in moving Panarin.
Yeah, I agree.
They may have another chance, and they got back Saad, and he's been a disappointment since he got back.
Yeah. And I wouldn't have expected that, but that's true.
Me neither.
No. Bob, it's always a pleasure. Great to hear from you. Next time we talk, maybe we're talking about a Penguin streak.
There you go. Thanks.
All right. It's Bob Grove. Tomorrow, Ray Fittipaldo is going to join us. We're going to look back at tonight's game between Carolina and the Steelers. So that's coming up on tomorrow's show. The King is on tomorrow's show as well. And don't forget about the after show, where the suit will be talking about tie lines and the value to the company. It's about the same reaction we had in the staff meeting when it was brought up. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
All right, great to have you with us on the show today. Thanks to Bob Grove and the Penguins. Our thanks to Jason Galloway, Wisconsin State Journal. Josh Showers on Sealands Grove. Greg Wetzel on Lewisburg. Tomorrow, old friend Ray Fittipaldi will be on the show. Ray, we're going to talk about the Steelers' showdown with Carolina tonight. And we're going to get that this evening. That is a game I'm looking forward to, Sean. It's the only other Thursday night game I look forward to this year was the Rams and the Vikings. And to its credit, it lived up to the billing. Now, that part, I mean, I was impressed by that.
Yeah, barely. I was barely a couple minutes into that thing. I get in the living room. It was already 14-7 before the popcorn was popped. So, yeah.
I mean, everything was moving. The game was fun. Like, the game was fun. Now, for Steeler fans, a little bit different here coming up tonight. This is not about fun tonight for Steeler fans. It's about winning the dang thing tonight. I got that. So that, I mean, I understand that completely. But I think that there's a contrast between the two, the ability where you've got to somehow keep some control and contain on Cam Newton. To his credit, he has been throwing the ball a lot better this year. And now, conversely, the Steelers have done a great job with ball control. The Steelers can shorten the game with how they play. Now, obviously, Ben's going to throw the ball, and I don't think the secondary can hold up for Carolina in this game. But the Steelers are going to have to find a way to get somebody on Luke Kuechly. That to me is going to be one of the keys. Can they get some semblance of control on Kuechly in this game? I think that's big. They can do that, then I think they're going to get out of this thing with a win.
Yeah, that's a great linebacker punch. I mean, you got to get Thomas Davis in the mix, too. Yeah.
He might be one of the more underrated guys I've seen in a long time. Davis has had a really nice, long, effective career, and he's overcome injuries. And you know what? That guy just plays all the time. I mean, I've always been impressed by him. Kuechly, though, Kuechly's a special guy, though. Jeez, he is good. Kuechly is good. But they have to get control of him. Because I think if you get control on Kuechly, I don't think the Carolina secondary is good enough to stick with Juju Smith-Schuster or with Antonio Brown, who was so excited about the game. He was clocked going 100 miles an hour on the Pittsburgh streets last night. Did you see that?
I did. Yeah, cruising up McKnight Road, and it's like, what are you doing?
He was going 100.
Ugh.
I mean, look, the game's at 8:20. You got time.
I mean, realize you can pay for the speeding ticket with the amount of paper you'll find between the seats of your car, or maybe underneath the the cushions of your sofa that you threw out of your townhouse in Florida back in April, but that's another story that we talked about before. It's like, oh, my God.
Well, have you been listening to Jack lately on the pregame show with Derek? You know, you diva receivers. Derek's like, I finally looked over at Jack. I said, he played on an 0-16 Lions team. I said, at that point, it does strip you of all the swagger.
At that point, he had nothing.
Jack's like, Jack leaves. He says, you do have a point. You could swagger around until, by the way, he was on the 0-16 Lions team. Ooh. Yeah. Well, we went to Michigan, and Derek did not go to dinner with us. Derek was out with his buddies because he made a lot of friends when he was in Detroit. And so when we got on the bus the next day, I looked at him, just got back in.
Look a little ragged.
You all right? Let's go down to Derek on the sideline. But you know the really great part about going down to Derek on the sideline? He didn't need an umbrella to block the field.
Very true.
Not all the screen. I hope the suit understands that not all the screen grabs were tributes.
Although he claims HD is slimming.
I have 18 lines right now. I'm not going to use any of them.
We have 20 seconds left.
Ray Fittipaldo tomorrow. Our thanks to Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15. And Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. And on WKOK.com.